Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I guess you can see me pretty much. The lighting's okay.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button if you're not already. I'll send new episodes straight to you every single week, just like this one. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists. Discover those new ones. Of course, you can grab us anywhere. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. We've had some fantastic guests dropping by. Actors Sophia Carson, Kyle Allen, and Sebastian D'Souza to talk about The Life List on Netflix. Ben Barnes was here. You know him from everything from The Punisher to Chronicles of Narnia. He's got his debut album out. Talked with Talib Kweli and Peaches, Hamilton Lighthouser, Damon Albarn from Blur and Gorillaz, Adrian Belew from David Bowie and King Crimson, Daniel Ash from Love and Rockets, Ash Avildsen and Emily Bett Rickards were here to talk about the movie Queen of the Ring, Denise Richards to talk about wanting to do a sequel to Drop Dead Gorgeous. She's also got a new reality series, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with Michael McDonald, the smoothest voice in rock and soul and the king of yacht rock before yacht rock was even a thing. From his time with the Doobie Brothers to his legendary solo career, of course, his signature smoky baritone has been a constant presence on radio waves for decades. Whether he's belting out those blue-eyed soul classics like What a Fool Believes or harmonizing on seemingly every 70s and 80s hit, McDonald's got that unmistakable magic that never goes out of style. And get this, he's back with the Doobie Brothers, because that one reunion tour a few years ago wasn't enough, nor should it have been. Their new album, Walk the Road, marks his first studio outing with them since 1980, and they're even throwing in a little accordion action just to keep us on our toes. You'll figure out what that's about. In fact, Michael's going to dive into the magic of getting the band back together, writing with Tom Johnson and Patrick Simmons, and why the Yacht Rock label just won't die, even if half his band wishes it would. All that and more as we talk Walk This Road. It's Kyle Meredith with Michael McDonald.
Hey, Kyle, how are you?
It's good to hear from you and see you again here, and especially because with the Doobie Brothers again. I remember we talked, it was probably like 5 years ago. It was around pandemic or pre-pandemic, and you were doing the Christmas touring and all that stuff. And we were talking about you reuniting with the Doobies for the big anniversary. And here we are now, a handful of years later, and you've got an album with them, which, by the way, let me compliment you, is such a great album.
Oh, you're nice to say that. Thank you. That was a real unexpected pleasure, being able to do the record with the guys again and you know, write songs and sing with them and do the tracks together. It was something I don't know that when we started off doing this, it was just going to be a 50th anniversary tour and that would have been it. And here we are 4 or 5 years later, still working, but, and no one's more surprised by that than us, you know, but, It was a great pleasure. John Shanks was a great mediator, producer, and he really helped us bring this thing to life. And talking with him recently, we even talked about possibly doing another one as the band together, and maybe revisiting the way we used to do it a little more by being on the floor together and recording the tracks live in a studio the way we used to do. And maybe even inviting some of the guys from the past to join us, I think that would be a real fun experiment for us at this point in our lives. I think in some ways we'd bring something more to it, and in some ways we might be have to face the ugly truth about the fact that we're close to senility at this point in our lives. But it's just been nothing but fun, For me, the band has always kind of represented something special, musically and friendship-wise, and to be able to come home to it has meant a lot to me, and to participate with the guys again and on all these different fronts has really been great, because I think the band has represented something to all of us that's unique apart from anything else we might have done musically in our careers. There's something about this turf that kind of makes us step up to the plate a little more. Like, with my band, for instance, if I needed an organ player, I'd get somebody who I thought was really great at it and had a lot of experience as an organ player or a synth player. I didn't really typically do those things myself. I just kind of sat at the piano and played and sang, and concentrated, more solely on that, whereas with the band, I've had the opportunity to play other instruments that I probably would have never played live. And I think we all have. We all found ourselves wearing different hats than we would wear in any other situation,
Yeah, because we even I don't know if this is one of the ones you're talking about, but like you even get to take out the accordion on this album.
Yeah, I did. And that thrilled me to no end, being able to play accordion on Tom's song, New Orleans. I practiced diligently for nights before that. Just so.
Does that come natural to you, the accordion?
Not at all. No, accordion and organ are two things that historically I've always looked at as if you didn't start playing these instruments when you were like five, you have no business trying now at 70, it's like, but then, never say never, and I've done nothing but enjoy that. It's really brought, a kind of an exciting challenge to me in my 70s that I didn't expect to have, at this point in my life,
Well, we should play the numbers a little bit here, because just to point out, because we've talked about like this is the first time you've been on a Doobie Brothers record officially since 1980, I believe. And it's the first time that you and Tom have been on an album together under the Doobies since 1976. That would have been Taking It to the Streets.
Right.
For all the history and everything that happens and whatever, like, how now that you're all back, now that it's the three of you again right there, writing these songs, taking the vocals, and you all come from different backgrounds usually when you bring a song in, how do you represent your vocals, his vocal, all of your vocals in that vision? Like, how does that work?
In really kind of haphazard ways, which I think is good because, in its haphazardness, if you will, we just kind of throw stuff against the wall, and it kind of decides for us what is going to fly and what isn't. Not every song we come up with is going to make the record, but in many cases, songs do. And a lot of times, it's stuff that has been languishing, half, demoed in some form or fashion. Computers are old enough now that I find things every day on my computer that I've totally forgotten that I wrote or and kind of threw down quickly, and there's a one or two songs on the album that were of that nature, but what I think I enjoy more than anything is writing songs again now, in this real time. Like Walk This Road was a started with John Shanks had the kind of the idea for the title and the song, and I just kind of helped him finish that, and you know, I think he had a little different feel on it. But I had been thinking that, you know, we one thing we never did. Well, we've done shuffles in the past as the Doobies, but I always thought that that was a natural for this band. A blues shuffle was, you know, something along the lines of what the Allman Brothers did, or, you know, some of the blues artists in the past. It's something that the band always did well, you know, but we never recorded that much, you know, and that it would be now would be the time to revisit that whole feeling. And so that song came about, like I said, originally from an idea that John had. And Learn to Let Go was also something John and I sat down and wrote together. So it was that those are kind of like real time things. The other two things were just kind of songs that I had demoed or in the past, and that were in varying forms of, you know, being finished. And when I played them for John, he would say, well, what about this? You know, what about, how about a bridge, or how about, you know, this tempo and this feel, you know? And, so we wound up kind of finishing those songs together, you know, and, I enjoyed that process too, you know, because I felt like those are songs that might have just languished forever had I not showed them to him, and he helped me finish them, you know.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Michael McDonald.
But just to have those three distinct voices like that, for you all to come from those places and to make it work, like, that's what's so incredible about this band, because you almost think, like, sometimes that shouldn't work, right? Like, you know, those type of things, but it does.
Yeah, well, we do, you know, I mean, and it's funny because I think it's always been kind of a strength of the band, even long before I joined them. You know, the band was always very diverse in their songbook, you know, and eclectic, you know. They did everything from like acoustic blues stuff to old Motown songs to hard rock, you know, driving rock guitar driven stuff to some more piano driven stuff with Billy Payne, you know. And Pat always had that that kind of guitarist, more, you know, steeped in his background with folk music and kind of everything from Slatke, you know, instrumentals. I mean, they did it all, really. So when I joined them, it was kind of business as usual, although a lot of people credit or blame me, whichever you want to, however you want to look at it, with changing the band. I don't think I was as much of a catalyst for change as the band was always ready to do that themselves. And I was just another page in that book, you know. And when we play live, I think there's many nights I realize that, you know, one of the strengths we have live is that you can't, you know, you may not like it all, but you can't get bored listening to the band, because we don't do the same thing all night long, you know. Is the live show is every bit as diverse, if not more so, than each of the records have been, you know.
Yeah, speaking of that, like and maybe of all the songs here, and there's a few to choose from, but The Kind That Lasts, that's one of the ones I really want to hear live.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to playing that one live, you know, because that's again, that's one of those grooves we've always kind of, you know, mucked around with, you know. We always love, Tommy and I and Pat and John, you know, we have a great love for New Orleans music and food and New Orleans in general, you know. You know, so we always, you know, we love the groups like the Meters and Little Feet and the bands that, you know, kind of represented that musical culture so well. And always wanted to try our hand at it. And you know, we would kind of rearrange some of our live stuff into more of a second line feel. I think for a while we were doing Here to Love You was, we were kind of moving that more into a, like a New Orleans kind of Alan Toussaint-ish kind of rhythm pattern, you know, underpinning, you know, because it worked for the song. It wasn't exactly how we did it live, but, you know, this one was kind of written in that genre or in that model. And for that reason, I look forward to playing it live, too. You know, and I really look forward to doing New Orleans, too, because that I think that song really goes, right to the heart of what the Doobies are all about. It's kind of that swampy rock thing, you know, that that we all really enjoy playing, you know, And I kind of look forward to pulling out my old accordion on that one, you know.
It'll be highlights, I swear it. I know. I noticed some good names in there too, because Pino's on The Kind That Lasts, right?
Yes, Pino, Victor on drums, a lot of guys, you know, that worked on it. Well, Mavis was on Walk This Road, and
We love Mavis.
I love Mavis. You know, I just saw her in New York. We were did a gig with her in New York, and she's amazing. She's such an inspiration, you know, and she's kind of like the first lady of, you know, her aura encompasses so much. You know, she's certainly a gospel artist, but she's every bit as much, you know, kind of an American conscious artist. You know, bringing us all to a little bit of enlightenment with her. You know, she's used her gospel music as a real vehicle for, you know, social enlightenment. You know, and that's not political. That's just, you know, like this is who we are, and this is how we should be with each other. You know, and that great reminder that, you know, we're not here to take anything away from each other. You know, and that's a fallacy. You know, in one of the, you know, the things that pins us to the ground. You know, more than anything else. You know, we all want the same things. We all deserve the inalienable rights provided by the Constitution. We have strength in the in our unity for to that end, and not and we and we suffer a great weakness when we try to partition ourselves off as to who should be more privileged than who else. You know, for so many years, you know, we've wrestled with that argument politically and socially, and people have used it to divide and conquer us, no less, probably more now than ever. You know, and the fact is, you know, when I hear the term, you know, disenfranchised white people, I have to kind of laugh a little bit. You know, it's really, you know, when did that term come to be? You know, because, you know, there's a lot more people with a bigger gripe than you know, the average, the American dream is suffering. It's under the weight of the world economics. You know, it's no one person's fault, and we're all, you know, suffering the consequences of a world that we could make better by uniting and looking after each other, as opposed to separating ourselves from each other and arguing about who deserves more. You know, it's really time for us to get beyond that, you know, and not leave our future generations with that burden, you know.
Right. That's really evident, especially on side A of this album, of this new album, the way it's stacked. And to he like, were you all aware, you, Tom, and Pat, that all three of you were sort of circling around similar themes on your songs that you were bringing in?
I don't think we were, but I don't think we ever have been. I think for us, we never approached an album with like this album's going to be about this, or this is, you know, we only approached records like, again, it's kind of a like let's just, you know, express ourselves in the moment and throw all of our ideas against the wall and see what theme kind of rises out of that, or if any. You know, we never really were married to the idea that the albums had to be thematic or you know, or even, you know, in any way have any great moral message. You know, it just really we always kind of wrote, I think, wrote our songs around the idea that, well, this is kind of human nature, isn't it? And something that's probably universal to a lot more people than just me, you know. And therefore, that's kind of the only criteria it takes for us to make a song out of it, you know. But with this album, you know, if it became a kind of a message socially, it was totally by accident, or subconscious, you know, not really something we developed in our foreconscious before going after it, you know. And I think Walk This Road was really more about John Shanks, when he first expressed the idea to me, was going, you know, this seems to fit you guys. You know, here you are after all these years, you know, kind of back together in yet another evolution of the band, and you know, it seems like, you know, you're stuck with each other. So maybe we write a song about that. But it became a broader picture the minute we started to write it. And then by the time we got the track going and Tom sang a verse and I sang a verse, Pat sang a verse, we started to realize that, Mavis was a perfect fit because, you know, it in a way kind of reminded me a little bit of an old Staples track, you know, with that kind of message, like, you know, let's raise our heads and look up, you know, and look beyond the struggles at our feet, you know, and see the promise of the future, you know. So it just seemed like a perfect fit in that moment. And God knows the track really picked up its soul quotient when she started singing on it. You know, the rest of us were just trying to keep up. You know, she killed it, you know. And that to me, you know, that's what makes her such an inspiration. You know, she when she goes out on stage, it's like she commands that whole, you know, 30, 40 feet of stage, you know, and in a way that it just takes a very special kind of performer to do, you know.
Yeah, if you guys want to make her an official Doobie at some point, I think the formula works.
Oh, yeah, well, we would do that in a heartbeat, I'm sure. I speak for everybody.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Michael McDonald.
Yeah, there was a quote that you had. It's probably in the press release, and you were saying that you're not a super prolific songwriter. And so I would think that maybe coming into a situation like this, where you have these multiple things, would actually benefit you. Like, what is your relationship to songwriting in that way? Because you have some, like, I talk with some songwriters. I always quote Jacob Dylan on this one. He says, "I start writing an album when it's time to make an album." You know, have the people who don't just in their spare time write.
No, we've always been that way too. You know, it's not like I sit around going to work and writing songs every day. You know, but I think the Doobies for me was the door to that part of my life that I think otherwise, I might have not really necessarily pursued. When I joined the band, I was at that point the opportunity that was presented to me by the band. Made me start thinking about writing again. You know, I became a songwriter by virtue of joining this band. I wrote songs before, and that's what got me to California. So I was a songwriter, but I had kind of let it go. You know, at the time that I joined Steely Dan, I was just a musician for hire. I was backing up some lead vocalist who had a record deal, or some other guy who singer-songwriter who had a record deal. I played sessions once in a while. Played a lot of club gigs. My first really good road gig was in a long time was Steely Dan, but I wasn't really going to ever write for that band. Donald Walter, pretty much, were the catalyst and the ground zero for all their music, you know. And I was, you know, thrilled to have the gig. They were my favorite band in the world at the time I got that gig, so I would have done it for free, you know. But when I joined the Doobies, you know, the guys were so gracious. Pat, especially, you know, like, you know, and Ted Templeman, you know, the producer, like, well, what do you got? They heard a demo I had made at Tyran's house, just kind of for fun. You know, he and I had made a demo of a song of mine, and Ted said, "Well, you guys should do that song, the last song in the world I would have ever dreamed the Doobie Brothers would ever record." But, you know, I was thrilled, and then it was like, "Well, you got anything else?" And I had, just a couple songs in my arsenal and, you know, played them down for the band. And the band, you know, kind of took hold of them. And they became, forever kind of Doobie Brothers songs, you know. And that door opened to, kind of writing on a more regular basis. But still, we only wrote when we had to. You know, it was like, okay, it's time to do another record. And it was like, oh, geez, you know, we all better come up with something, you know, and I guess that's just our MO, you know, as songwriters, you know. We were never, I always admired those guys who kind of couldn't stop writing songs, you know, they were so prolific, you know. I was never that way, and I can write a song for 5 years, and there are some songs that I have been writing for 5 years, you know, and only the next album will ever make me finish them. But, you know, thank goodness for that. I mean, who would have thought at our age that we'd even still be doing this, you know. And I know that to all the people we know from the 70s that we worked with back then, Donald, guys in Toto, you know, whenever we're on stage together at this point in our lives, it's not lost on any of us that, you know, who would have thought that we'd still be doing this, you know?
So glad you are. I really am. And what you all do, again, there's magic in this. And I'll wrap up only on the lighter side by saying, you know, this album gets to be the one that comes out after that HBO doc, which I'm sure brings a whole new fan base in for you guys for the yacht thing. So I don't know if, did you watch it?
I did. I did. Well, my Christopher Cross's daughter was one of the producers on it, and you know, and so you know, she was very kind to us, you know. But I think she did a they did a great job of really depicting, in all fairness, what that era was all about, you know. And the you know the drive to, you know, bring musicality to the pop music that we were making, you know. It was, you know, I enjoyed every minute of it, making it, you know, being interviewed for it, and watching it, you know, and I'd have to say, as far as the yacht rock thing goes, not everybody's thrilled about that. Some of the guys in my band right now aren't thrilled about it. You know, they don't like the moniker because they, you know, they consider themselves a rock band, a classic rock band, and they are every bit that, you know. So this is just a kind of a comedic moniker thought up by some guys who had a, you know, overactive imaginations. But you know, I've always thought it was funny, and I couldn't be prouder of the company I keep in that genre than now that it's a genre. Because you know, if like yacht rock is Steely Dan, the Toto, and the Doobie Brothers, and the Eagles, or bands like that, hey, I'm all for it, you know. It's not like, you know, they're throwing me in with, you know, the Archies or something, you know. So.
And I'll point out and Buffett being in there as well, because you guys are going to be touring with the Coral Reefer band too when you go out there. So
We are,
that's a
yeah.
good lineup for a tour.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be fun. Well, you know, that band was always great players, you know, Mac McAnally, all the guys in the band, they've always done a great job live, and I think they've always brought a lot to the show for Jimmy, you know, and he knew how to put a good band together. So it's going to be fun for us to play with those guys, and looking forward just to again, you know, at our age, it's all about, you know, seeing people you probably wouldn't see again on this earthly plane, but for the fact that we're all still crazy enough to be out there working it in our 70s. And I think the beauty of that whole thing is that, you know, what's a crisis today, you know, like leaving your hearing aids on the bus, you know, or things like that, that, you know, are trying to remember the actors in a movie that, you know, and then realizing that we don't even remember what we're talking about at this point, you know, is offset by the fact that once we get up there on stage, we're all like kind of like 19, 20 years old again, you know, something magical happens, and all the aches and the pains and you know, the forgetfulness and all, it all kind of disappears, and we all kind of fall into the moment the same way we did when we were in our 20s, you know.
Well, I'll be excited to see you guys out on the road. Especially playing these songs in this new album. Michael, it's so great to see you and talk to you again. Congrats on Walk This Road,
Thank
and
you.
thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Kyle.
And my thanks to Michael McDonald. The new Doobie Brothers record is called Walk This Road. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Do hope you hit that subscribe button if you're not already. Before you get out of here, I'll send new interviews to you every single week, just like this one. You can grab us anywhere you get your podcasts from, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review. And then after that, I recommend heading over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting 6 p.m. Eastern. In fact, it's 4 hours of classics from the 70s, 80s, 90s, the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Status Quo, Funkadelic, Fontaines D.C., Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Depeche Mode, Crowded House, Linda Ronstadt, The Welcome Wagon, Travis, Biba Doobie, Big Thief, and my interview with Taj Mahal, the blues legend himself. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Is there too much noise out here for you, Kyle?
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.